this country of Kenya is greater than any one individual. And that for this country to come together, leaders must come together. Leaders must be able...
President Uhuru Kenyatta announcing his reconciliation with opposition leader Raila Odinga on March the 9th. The breakthrough came after an unannounced meeting between the pair at Kenyatta's office, their first since August's disputed election.
The time has come for us to confront and resolve our differences. Kenyans cannot remember why and where they disagreed in the first place.
Raila Odinga vowed to end his defiance campaign, but most notably saw him swear himself in as People's President at the end of January. Piers Dawson is a consultant with the London-based risk firm Africa Matters Limited. He says the two leaders' reconciliation spells good news for Kenyatta's Jubilee Party.
For President Kenyatta, this is great news. It's Kenyatta's second term in power. What he's really focused on is securing his legacy, and that means implementing his Big Four development agenda, which is food security, boosting manufacturing, universal healthcare, and also affordable housing. So moving on from the political turmoil of the last few months, this is going to allow Kenyatta to focus on that. He's not going to have to be worrying the whole time about what Odinga and NASA are doing, and he can actually get on with the business of running the country. So for Kenyatta, this is good news.
Good news perhaps for Kenyatta, but bad news for Odinga's NASA party. His truce with the president has thrown the main opposition alliance into disarray, with some critics suggesting that Odinga may even have dealt them a death blow. Various members of NASA gathered on Monday to discuss their future, but it's believed that Odinga did not attend. Piers Dawson.
There's fairly limited options open to Odinga going forward. And also, I mean, it's important to understand or to look at how he's positioned himself in the course of this electoral fallout. He has tried to portray himself as a champion of democracy, as someone who's for the people. And this latest move, in a sense, is playing into that image. He's talking about wanting to work together for Kenyans, bringing the country together. He's very much playing the role of the dignified statesman.
Raila Odinga has been in this situation before, during the last elections, when he was up against Mwai Kibaki. Again, we saw that the political upset was having a lot of disruptions on Kenya's neighbours, with a lot of trade being affected. This time round, how bad has this crisis been for other East African countries?
I mean, the issue, of course, has been trade in terms of exports from Uganda and Rwanda being rerouted and being exported from Tanzania as opposed to Mombasa. That's been damaging for Kenya. I expect that is going to normalise in the next few months. I don't think there's any significant, medium or long-term danger of Kenya being challenged as East Africa's economic hub or the port of Mombasa not being the main port for exportation in East Africa. So that's probably, that's going to continue, I imagine.
Yet not everyone predicts a smooth return to normalcy. Activity at Kenya's Mombasa port, the hub of East Africa, has slowed down considerably and may take weeks to recover. 80% of Uganda's imports pass through here, as do almost all of Rwanda's exports. But since the crisis, Kampala and Kigali have both been diverting their goods to Tanzania. And for Ali Kansatsu, a financial and political analyst in Nairobi, President John Magufuli has been able to exploit Kenya's political crisis for his own gain.
President Magufuli, for all that people criticise him for, has been very alert to spot the opportunity. He prized away the Total oil pipeline away from us that should have been coming through Kenya. There's talk of the railway connecting Rwanda with Tanzania as well. So very potent adversary, and I think we've been caught napping. Kenya typically does not handle its elections well. Our economy tends to slow down on average 1.7% in GDP terms around an election. And when we fumble it, and here last year we had two elections, not one, we had a sort of a low-level kind of opposition which was in dissent, so it really put our economy under pressure.
Kenya's electoral crisis was sparked by Raila Odinga's decision to boycott a second vote, arguing the Electoral Commission was biased against him, and his refusal to recognise Kenyatta's victory. The political crisis rattled investors and Kenya's business community, with the KEPSA Private Sector Alliance warning that trade from Uganda and Rwanda was being diverted towards Dar es Salaam. Piers Dawson nonetheless thinks it's too soon for Dar es Salaam to overtake Nairobi as the economic capital of East Africa.
you can't get away from the fact that, you know, it is easier for Uganda and Rwanda to export goods via Kenya and Mombasa, you know, and there is better infrastructure in place for them to do this. And of course, the distance for the exportation of goods is less. And then coupled with the fact that the standard gauge railway in Kenya, you know, has recently opened, and only at the end of last month, President Museveni was praising Kenya for completing it on time and for bringing down the cost of transporting goods. So that, I mean, that's another thing that goes into it. Now you have the development of this railway, so that's only going to increase Mombasa's preeminence as the main port for the exportation of goods in East Africa.
Critics like Satchu, however, argue that projects like this standard gauge railway have come at a huge cost for Kenya and further entrenched it in debt. Nairobi, for instance, is still processing compensation claims from both Uganda and Rwanda over its last political crisis, which led to severe shortages in commodities for both Kampala and Kigali. Neither of them have yet been fully compensated. Ali Khan Satchu.
Kenya's GDP has been climbing quite dramatically. We undertook our biggest infrastructure project post-independence. That was the railway. That took on a lot of debt. Then we had a triple whammy last year. We had the drought, which crimped the economy. We had the rate cap, which also brought private sector credit growth right down and slowed us even further. And then we had the election, and then the Groundhog Day, another election. So, yes, I mean, our income has been going down. Kenya Inc. Has been on the back foot at the same time as it's trying to shoulder a much bigger debt burden. So I think the bottom line is, you know, the government has got to trim its cloth. It's got to cut expenditure. There were some comments by the Treasury Secretary, Mr. Rotich, last week when he was quoted as saying the country was broke. And then he backtracked from it and said it was fake news. But the bottom line is that, you know, there is an awareness that we've been overspending. There is an awareness we've got to rein it in. I think the government, you know, cannot now undertake a project like the railway again. They've got to make sure these projects that they've undertaken make money and are sustainable.
Kenya's debt crisis has gotten so bad that it's had to slash about $16 billion to various counties, affecting doctors and county workers' salaries. Nairobi has also had to raise $2 billion in long-dated bonds, including a 30-year debt, despite an ongoing spat with the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, over a standby credit facility, as Ali Khan Satchu explains.
So it was a standby facility only to be used in a situation of exogenous shocks to the economy. It was in the amount of about $1.5 billion. But in a world where people are concerned about debt, it was a major statement of support because it was the IMF, of course, behind it. About 4 weeks ago, we heard murmurings that the facility was not available to be drawn on. And then there was a considerable toing and froing between the IMF, who visited Kenya, left, I think, a few days ago. The IMF put some conditions on that facility being agreed by the 13th of March. One of those appears to be around a substantial modification in the current rate cap regime, i.e. allow banks to lend above the rate cap if they feel that the credit is appropriate. Another condition has been around bringing the deficit under control. So I think, you know, the government clearly wants to be able to call on the IMF if it needs to. It's an important signaling when you've got the IMF on board. And I think the government will be making clear movements in the direction of making sure that facility stays in place.
If Kenya hasn't slashed its budget deficit, does that mean it will not be able to access this facility?
It means if we don't have a clear program where we're committing to certain cuts, then we'll have a problem in having that facility renewed.
Yet this might prove difficult. Much of Kenya's GDP is currently going towards repaying its loans, but the revenue being collected doesn't add up. Worse still, a recent Auditor General report indicated that about $40 billion could not be accounted for and pointed the finger at corruption. All of this means that beyond the veneer of reconciliation, Kenya's challenges may only just be beginning.